set your course for the Hoth system. General Veers, prepare your men.
All troops will debark for ground assault. Prepare to target the main generator.
Echo Station 3TA.
On an Imperial Walker.
Attack pattern Delta. Go now. Watch that clock fire, boys. Right now, I feel like I'd take on the whole Empire myself.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the base. Imperial troops have entered.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Echo Base. This is number 103. We are recording this on the 4th of July, actually. So we're celebrating the birth of America in Echo Base. How you guys doing that tonight? You guys excited, red, white, and blue, and fireworks and stuff? Or
we are a hidden rebel base. We cannot launch off fireworks because that would give away our position.
That's right.
We have to go all incognito. Everything is dark. Everything is cold.
You take all the fun out of 4th of July, too, I must say. You really, really do. Oh, well, that voice you heard there was my co-host, Tim. Tim, I assume you're doing well. How are you?
Doing pretty well.
Good, good. The other voice you haven't heard yet is Chris. Chris, how are you?
I'm pleased because Tim and I were worried last week that you had went off and died.
I went off and died? What happened last week? Was I not on the show last week?
No, you weren't.
No.
Oh. I feel what happened last week. Maybe I was out in the cold. I had to cut my Tauntaun open to stay warm.
Yep. That's exactly what we said.
Yeah, that
you
did.
Is
what we said.
That was our speculation, that you got lost out somewhere in Hoth, far away from Echo Base, and you had to go crawl inside your Tauntaun.
And then I think we said that the Empire attacked.
Okay.
We were just sitting there recording while the Empire attacked, and then they left, and then we didn't know if you were dead or not.
Well, you know, this is the first thing to teach you on, you know, day one of survival school on Hoth, mm-hmm. is to cut your Tauntaun open and crawl inside. That is day one.
When in doubt, eviscerate your Tauntaun.
Remember, no Tauntauns were hurt making this podcast, so.
Very true. We are pro-Tauntaun here.
We are. We are pro-Tauntaun. That just sounds wrong. We are pro-Tauntaun, yes. We should probably jump right into things here tonight before we get any farther off track than we already are. Chris, now you had solicited from one of our listeners or one of our Slack team members a letter we have posted on the website. Why don't you kind of give the listeners some details about what's out there and what they can? I don't want to say look forward to reading because it's a long read, but you know, I guess
I titled it an essay for a reason, you know.
An essay. Yeah. So what do we have out there?
When we had our episode about the Star Wars viewing order, one of our listeners and Patreon donors and Slack members, Mike Clark, he said he had a response to that. And I was like, okay, just, you know, email it and, you know, we'll read it on the show.
He warned us.
Well, yeah.
You know, and we were already a little bit nervous beforehand, too, because, you know, from his discussions on Slack, we know he's very verbose.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Good points, though. He brings up
some really incredible
points. He's very analytical. He looks at things from different perspectives. So we knew when we got something on this, it was going to be good.
Yes. So I get an email from him eventually, and there's nothing in like the actual email itself except a Microsoft Word document. So I open it up, and I get a 9-page response to our episode about, you know, the viewing order.
9 pages.
Yeah, he actually, I believe, and I'm not going to go read the whole thing because it is, again, 9 pages. And I think it responds to chronological order being like, you know, why you should watch in chronological order or why not. I don't know. I can't remember. But I thought it was a good response, and I didn't want to sit and talk about it on the show because we've had the discussion already. So I decided, why not put it on the website? So I had Andrea, who is our third new co-host on the Crash Couch, I had her edit it for me and make it presentable and professional and fix grammatical mistakes. I put it on the site, and we'll put a link in the show notes, but if you want to type it in, it's randomchatter.com/SWVOD-/ and then the word essay. And it's titled The Star Wars Viewing Order Debate, an Essay.
Awesome. And thank you, Mike. And we actually, there's a ton of discussion we had mentioned before on the Slack channel. We had some responses on Twitter that we got from folks. So thank you to everyone for all your feedback.
Awesome. See, next up here in the news, actually, Christmas runs back to you again. You want to talk about a Star Wars Galactic Battlegrounds mod.
Yes. So Star Wars Galactic Battlegrounds is an old real-time strategy game for the PC. And by old, I mean, I think it came out in 2001, I believe. And then had an expansion pack for Episode 2 called Clone Campaigns that I think came out in like 2003. And back in the day, like, I loved this game. Like, I played it all the time. Honestly, I played it way too much. But then, you know, as computers got better, then you really couldn't play it on new computers anymore until I think it was 2014 or 15. GOG Games, which I can't remember what their actual like full name is, but the abbreviation is GOG, released a bunch of old LucasArts Star Wars games, and Galactic Battlegrounds was one of them. And I think you can buy it, the whole thing, for like, and the expansion pack together for like $5. I personally love it. I still play it today. And I was on the internet one day and I saw something called Galactic Battlegrounds Expanding Fronts. And I was like, well, what is Expanding Fronts? Like, is there a sequel that I didn't know about? Apparently, the Galactic Battlegrounds community, which is still heavily active, because you can make your own scenarios in the game. So people literally make like the levels of the Phantom Menace, for example, and release it all as one campaign, so you can play the Phantom Menace as a real-time strategy game.
Cool.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really cool. But anyways, it's very active, and these people released a mod for it called Expanding Fronts, which is kind of eventually meant to like pretty much upgrade the whole thing. I think they just released like the first version of it back in December, and it has things like in the scenario editor where you create all of this stuff. It has like upgraded maps, like it has a Jakku map, it has a Scarif map. Really neat things.
Wow.
Added units.
Oh, the Scarif map be cool.
Yeah, yeah. It is. I like the Jakku one because it has a giant Star Destroyer in the middle.
Oh, that's cool. Nice.
I'll have to like post a picture or something in Slack, but it has new units and new things to play around with. And the cool thing is that eventually that their plan is to like have a bunch of new units in the game and kind of make it almost not really a sequel, but almost like a full fledged expansion pack to it. But I think it's a really fun game. You know, I will set and I'll start just like a 2v2 game. And 2 hours later I finished it. Wow. So it's something that I, you know, it brings back memories for me, and I just wanted to sit and promote it a little bit just in case anybody has played the game and didn't know about it.
Or have never played the game. You know, I've never played this, and I like real-time strategy games. I love the concept behind them, so I may have to pick this up. It's available on Steam for, $5.99 is a regular price. It's on sale for $2.39 right now.
Oh, that is okay. A deal.
Wow.
I should probably buy that right now while we're talking. But yeah, it sounds pretty cool because I do like the concept of the real-time strategy games, you know, collecting resources, building units, building barracks. And yeah, it's just I just find that almost therapeutic.
Yeah. I'll say that, you know, parts of it has aged, obviously, and it has quirks about it that, you know, you kind of got to deal with. I mean, personally, like, I'm a perfectionist when I play it, and I kind of have to... Sometimes there are cheat codes, by the way. Actually, there's one cheat code where if you type Simon Says, it spawns a character for you called Simon the Killer Ewok. And he's super powerful and can kill units, you know, just in a few shots. But when I like build like the walls and the gates of my base, I always put him at the front because the computer likes to be very rude and attack me like 5 minutes into the game when I'm still building up, you know, my housing.
How dare that computer?
I know. And, you know, it's just...
I mean, you'd think there's a war going on or something.
But, you know, there are a few, you know, quirks about it that, you know, don't really hold up now, but it's still very fun and definitely a classic Star Wars game.
Very cool.
And for $239 or something?
I think it's $239 on Steam.
That is a deal.
Yeah, $239. It's only on sale for a while, but by the time this gets posted, it'll probably go back to the regular price of a whopping $5.99. So save your pennies. Don't have a coffee tomorrow and you'll be able to buy this.
There you go.
Or in the case of Derek, don't get Subway.
Yeah.
There it is.
Oh, Lord.
Yep.
There's Why did we mention Derek again?
There's your Derek mention.
I always like to get it out of the way at the beginning of the episode.
We haven't had any Gungan references yet, so I'm safe there, I guess. But
you're never safe from that, Lou.
I know.
And in fact, Lou, I have something in the works for a future episode of Echo Base.
Oh, he hasn't heard last week, has he?
Oh
no, I did not listen to Lucy.
Oh no, and last week was even better. Oh yeah, so much good stuff. Okay. Remember, folks, Patreon, and you know Lou will. Yep. You know.
Oh Lord, here we go. So the only bit of new Star Wars news we had this past week was Force of Destiny. At least the first two episodes, we had the Sands of Jakku and BB-8 Bandits. I have not had a chance to check these out yet. I knew they were coming. I'm anxious to start seeing this series, but have you guys watched them yet?
Oh yeah,
yes.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. Very short. I think both of them are less than 2.5 minutes long. These first two, obviously, Jakku, BB-8, they're focused on Rey. And really, these could actually be cut scenes that came out of Episode 7. Mm-hmm. They are just, they fit into the story. They fit into the flow. They're really cool, fun little things to watch. And I'm looking forward to more of them.
How many are they going to be in total? Do you guys know offhand?
I'm not sure if that was ever announced.
Okay. I know they announced a bunch of the episodes coming, but yeah, no, I'm looking forward to seeing these.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're fantastic. There are, unfortunately, some folks out there who are not only not interested in them, and, you know, I guess that's fine if you don't like something, but they're kind of bashing them because they are female-centered stories. They're centered on female characters from across all of Star Wars. So they're not real happy with that. I guess there's some folks out there on social media who are kind of bashing them a bit because they think either they have some kind of conflict with current canon, or they want them or they don't want them to reflect canon. There's just, you know, these are things that were made largely for kids. And I think they're great little shorts. Let kids enjoy them. You can certainly go enjoy them too. Don't be overly analytical. Just be a viewer and enjoy them. You don't have to analyze the crap out of these things. That's all I got to say on it.
They don't look like they're made for the adult fan. So
yeah,
I when I first did hear about this concept coming out, I was a little bit, I don't know, I won't say miffed, I won't say upset, but surprised that it's only on female centric characters. And surprising the fact that it's not that they're doing it, it's just that it's such a blatant attempt to go under the, I don't know, the popular thing now is to highlight the female characters and to have that focus. And it's like, are you doing this because you want to and you want to showcase these characters, or are you doing it because it's going to make you money because that's what's in right now? That's what bothers me about it the most. It's not that it is a female character. It's just that they're doing it because, you know, in my opinion, they may be heading down a path because it's where the money is. It's where they're going to please the most fans and hence bring more money.
Well,
I have no problem pleasing fans. I have no problem with them doing it. It's just what's your real reason for doing it?
I think personally, at least from my perspective growing up, I never saw Star Wars advertised, at least from like the movie perspective, and then to a lesser extent Clone Wars. I never saw it advertised as a boys thing or a girls thing or a kids thing or an adults thing. It was, you know, it advertised the content and then just let the general public kind of decide who the content is meant for. I think though that possibly with this, I feel like the backlash that some fans have with it about the whole female-centric thing and that it's advocating for kids is because the powers that be have marketed it as such. Like, at Celebration, it was, you know, the Forces of Destiny panel that they had, and I can't remember what the title of it was, but it was heavily, like, attracting the girls' audience there, I think. I mean, I might be wrong, and that, you know, people can disagree, but I think that's what that was. But up until now, I don't think, even with, you know, the female-led movies, TFA and Rogue One, I don't think they weren't advertised as a girl movie or a boy movie with a girl lead or anything like that. And I think that that's smart because, you know, once you say, well, Star Wars is a boys thing or Star Wars is a girls thing, then, you know, you're kind of making some polarized opinions within the fandom, and you know how crazy the fandom can be at times. But, you know, even with like something like Rebels, yeah, you like Ezra is this, you know, the so-called main character, and he's a young boy or a young, now I would say probably now a young man, but I don't think it's marketed that way, at least by Disney and Lucasfilm. The people that make the toys and people that make the clothing, yeah, now that's where things, you know, get a little bit more towards male or female. But that's not the fault of Star Wars or Disney or Lucasfilm. Actually, there's a person I follow on Instagram, and I can't remember what the account was, but they were talking about Star Wars, like, greeting cards, and they were showing pictures, and a lot of them were cards that mentioned boy, because it was all, you know, kid birthday cards for kids, for a boy or for a young teenager. Only a few of them said anything about girls or were just, like, not gender specific at all. But, you know, that's not the fault of Disney or Lucasfilm. That's the fault of the card maker. So, but yeah, Lou, I do see what you mean by this. And I think most, it has nothing to do really with the content. Like, I thought the first episode was just okay. I thought the plot was a little boring. The second one was a lot better, in my opinion. It was more exciting. Mm-hmm. I like seeing Rey because, you know, how can you not like Rey? But I definitely see your point. And I'm curious at how the reaction would have been if they would have just been like, oh yeah, here's a new short web series, you know, kind of like the old Clone Wars micro series, and then just let the episodes come out, and then, you know, you'll see. Don't say, oh yeah, we're, you know, making this all about women. Just right. Just as you wouldn't be like, oh yeah, we're making this all about the male heroes of Star Wars.
Yeah, there. I certainly think that maybe if they did that, there might have been a little bit less bluster from the people who like to bluster about such things. But also, I think, I guess, fairness in advertising. If their target audience, is kids. You know, they're not necessarily saying that their target audience is young girls, because really what has been put out there quite a bit is, hey, Star Wars is for everybody. And right. While these are marketed towards kids and these are female characters, I think everyone can enjoy them. I enjoy them. I think they are fun little shorts. If we just look at the very surface of it, well, no, there's certainly no money to be made off of these by Disney or Lucasfilm, because these are, you know, they're up on YouTube. But that said, when we look at the long game, well, gee, this is something that can further engage kids into the Star Wars fandom, and that hopefully sells action figures and movie tickets and all sorts of stuff like that. The long game for everything is some type of profit motivation for them, which I'm fine with. And I think we're all happy to, you know, throw our money all over them to have them continue providing us with that kind of stuff. You know, it's just it's unfortunate that some people will perceive things as being not for them, or even to some extremes against them. If it is marketed toward a certain audience or happens to contain certain elements in it, you know, so that just bothers me. Star Wars is for everyone.
Right. And that is unfortunate if people take that as a, you know, personal affront to them. This isn't about me. And it's not what I'm getting at either. I think, you know, it's funny. As you guys are talking, I was letting Sansa's Cube play in the background. And then this first look from Star Wars Force of Destiny came up, and I'm looking at the subtitles as it's going through, and it's interesting because it's kind of the same thing we've been talking about. They mention, you know, the first subtitle comes up here. It says, for many years, something that's been really important to Star Wars is these characters. And it goes on to say that the kids can grow up and recognize a little bit of themselves in. So even in the marketing, they're never calling out the fact that it's only the female characters they're highlighting, but they clearly are, and they clearly know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's very strategic.
Yeah, it is. I'd be less critical of this decision if they were doing some male characters in there as well, too. Things should be balanced, I think, not all one-sided.
I think that they're, like, I know that StarWars.com did a poll about what Forces of Destiny character we're excited to see. And I know Chewbacca was on the list. I know Wicket was on the list.
Yes.
I don't know.
I think there are one or two other male characters on that list.
Yeah. And the panel that this was shown at Celebration was the Heroines of Star Wars panel, which is about the females. So I think that's why people associated this, regardless of what, you know, who it's meant for, with being a girl thing.
Right.
But in the article on StarWars.com talking about it, it says, Star Wars Forces of Destiny is for anyone who has been inspired by Leia's heroism, Rey's courage, or Ahsoka's tenacity, said Kathleen Kennedy. And then they're talking about some of the action figures that are going to be coming out based on this. And it says, From Princess Leia to Sabine Wren, Star Wars heroines are unique, and we wanted to represent that in the product line for Star Wars Forces of Destiny, said Jimmy Pitaro, chairman, Disney Consumer Products and Interactive Media. And it's going to have things like a Rey figure, Sabine figure, Leia figure. Also looks like maybe a Kylo Ren figure, so I guess it's not all girls. But, you know, little tiny words and phrases and sentences that allude to that. I guess I can see why people would be saying, oh yeah, this is a show for girls, like, or you know, little girls. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it's because I like the characters they're showing. I just, like I said, I wish it was more balanced. But
you know, I'm okay with it. I think this is a great thing, and I think that characters like, you know, Rey or Jin or Leia are characters that anyone can look up to, no matter what their, mm-hmm. you know, race, gender, whatever. They, yep. they, you know, represent some great strength and fortitude. And, yeah. and again, these are just fun little shorts. I see no harm in anything in this. And again, Star Wars is for everyone.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what the harm is. I'm looking through the photos of some of the action figures, and wow, this Chewbacca action figure looks creepy. It looks like Chewbacca was from Planet of the Apes from the 70s.
Uh-oh.
I swear to God, it's wow. Plus, I think he's holding his bowcaster aroma. That's a different topic entirely.
Well, I was wondering. See, I didn't know that they were releasing a set of action figures that coincide with this. And
there's a set of Star Wars Force of Destiny action figures from Hasbro.
Okay. I mean, I'm a little... Lou, you're looking at him now. Chris, I don't know if you've seen them. I haven't
seen
them.
Oh, my, Chewbacca looks awful.
Doesn't he?
My concern here is that Forces of Destiny obviously has a very distinctive animation style. And is that coming out in the characters?
Yes.
In the action figures that they're doing? Because that... Okay, I mean...
I don't know, Chewbacca doesn't belong here at all, though. I don't, this Chewbacca is just really, really bad.
I mean, not everything can be Black Series. And certainly younger kids, certain features of characters are more appealing to younger kids in the toys that they play with. You know, things like larger eyes and that kind of stuff are generally more appealing to kids that way. So, I mean, maybe that's something that they're doing.
Honestly, the Rey figure looks the best, but Chewbacca, man, whew.
Yeah.
That's something, what nightmares are made of.
Yeah, I mean, Rey's not bad, Jin's not bad, Sabine's not bad, Leia looks a little off. But yeah, Chewbacca is just, wow, creepy. Tim, you should Google.
I'm putting this in the
Chewbacca Forces of Destiny
in the Star Wars Slack channel right now.
Okay, because yeah, it's wow. and he's holding the bowcaster. He's got his arm through the stock. I don't know. It's just, anyways. we should probably move along because we now stretched that discussion on longer than the episodes have been released.
Yes.
So, Tim, you had a little trip recently that Chris and I are both very jealous of. You actually got to leave Echo Base.
I did.
And you went back to the mothership.
Yeah, yeah. I left Echo Base, had a nice little jaunt over to the West Coast. I had a work trip out to San Francisco, and it was something that had been anticipated for a couple of months, and had gotten to chat with our friend Justin Bulger at Star Wars Celebration about the trip, saying, hey, going to be in your neck of the woods sometime in the next few months. Would love to visit and hang out and stuff. And he said, yeah. He said, well, you know, let me know once you settle on dates. We'll have you stop by and I'll give you the tour. And
jerk.
What? definitely got the tour. My wife, who also does some work with me in my business, she's a co-owner. She was out there with me. And my buddy John, who works with me, we were out on this work project and stayed out an extra day and got to visit Lucasfilm and ILM, courtesy of Justin. So
that's so awesome.
Yeah, it was a beautiful, beautiful blue sky, sunny San Francisco day, and Justin met us.
Now, what I'm most curious about is I and maybe the mail's not working or something because I haven't gotten a T-shirt. Chris, have you gotten any T-shirts from Tim from his trip?
No.
I think the Empire has actually disrupted parcel delivery to Echo Base.
Okay, so, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, totally makes sense. That's, yeah. Good on me for making that one up. We met out at the very iconic Yoda fountain out in the courtyard of the main Lucasfilm building there. Out on the Presidio, I think Justin said they have four buildings between Lucasfilm and ILM. So he met us there. We talked, got some pictures in front of the fountain and such. Went into the lobby. The lobby is the only public area for folks to go into. It's not certainly not a bad area. It's a nice lobby. There's a Death Trooper armor there. There is a Darth Vader armor there. They have some rather extensive bookshelves with a variety of different Star Wars memorabilia. There's some lightsabers and some busts of different characters and that kind of stuff. But we got to go past the lobby. In order to do so, we had to sign non-disclosure agreements, NDAs, that said that, you know, first of all, we would obey the instructions of our tour guide. We would stay on the designated path. And if by chance we did happen to come across something that we were told we could not disclose, then we had to follow those rules. There was nothing along our tour path that we came across, though, that we couldn't talk about. So, you know, Justin kind of took us through the halls, and through the halls overall, you know, lots and lots of not only Star Wars memorabilia, which is obviously the big focus of Lucasfilm, even though they've worked on some other things, but keeping in mind that a lot of it is shared space with the ILM, and ILM is just involved in darn near any movie that has effects associated with it. So we saw things from Jurassic Park and Ghostbusters movies and Die Hard movies and all sorts of different things across all sorts of different genres. We saw matte paintings. We saw scale models. We saw animatronics. Gosh, I just tons and tons of really neat things.
You didn't see a script for episode 8 lying around anywhere, did you?
Well,
you didn't pick up a copy, maybe, you know. I was going to be in the copy room for a minute. I'm going to make a photocopy of a few things. I'll be right back.
No, sadly, no, did not.
It sounds like an awesome trip.
It was great. Bumped into a couple of notables along the way. Rounded a corner, and there was Andy Gutierrez giving a tour to a couple of folks. Folks probably know Andy from the Star Wars show. She's one of the co-hosts there on the YouTube show that they do. Yep. And she was great. Just kind of chatted briefly. She was, you know, with some other people, but introduced myself, shook hands and all that. We continued on our way a little bit further on, actually bumped into Pablo Hidalgo. He was, I think, on his way to lunch, but, you know, again, stopped and chatted briefly. I didn't want to interrupt his day, but got to shake hands with Pablo. Hung out with Justin for lunch. We had lunch at their really awesome cafeteria. You know, you want a cafeteria at a place to work that's like this. Not only was there an incredible selection of food, but the view of San Francisco and the Bay was incredible from there. We finished up with lunch and actually ended up bumping into Andy again. They were shooting a part of a segment for the Star Wars show in one of their conference rooms, which happened to be along our tour route. And as we were passing by, I think she just looked out the window, saw that we were there, opened up the door, said, "Hey, Justin, you guys got to come in here." So if you've seen the most recent episode of the Star Wars show, they have a segment on this huge mural, which is insanely detailed with all the characters across all 8 movies, along with some other Lucasfilm notables are kind of sprinkled in throughout this. Incredibly detailed. The thing is huge. It was awesome. And Andy invited us in to kind of get an up-close look. While we were looking, Jen Heddle, who was in charge of Lucasfilm Publishing, she happened to stop in to take a look at it. Leland Chi, known as the keeper of the Holocron, he stopped in to take a look at it. So we were, you know, kind of in the room with these folks looking at at this artwork, which is just absolutely incredible. We got out of there. We got a chance to do a little bit of shopping at their staff store. That they have right in their building there. A lot of things in the store that you would find at a lot of other places, Toys R Us or Walmart or, you know, different vendors that we saw at Celebration. A couple of exclusive things, though. My wife and I both picked up Lucasfilm shirts. My wife, in fact, got the zip-up hoodie that Pablo is often seen wearing on the Star Wars show and in other things that he does. I picked up a T-shirt, picked up Boba Fett beer stein, which will be a nice addition to my collection. Haha, get it? Picked up also a bottle of Reserve Skywalker Ranch wine, or Skywalker Vineyards wine, rather. So that was kind of neat. Tons of posters all around the buildings. not only of films that Lucasfilm and ILM have worked on, but from what Justin told us, George Lucas is apparently one of the largest, if not the largest, collectors of foreign film posters. So these are all vintage posters. Most of them are for domestic movies, but they're domestically produced movies. But these are the overseas versions and foreign language versions of those posters. So you have full cinema size posters all over these buildings, dozens and dozens and dozens of them in beautiful condition. Just really, really neat. The ILM stuff, again, all sorts of different props and scale models and things like that. It was a really fun tour. We were probably there for a couple of hours. Many thanks to Justin for spending some time with us and kind of walking us around there. He was a great tour guide. He knew a lot of stuff about, you know, obviously not just the Star Wars things, but even some of the things that were not Star Wars, he was able to tell us about those. So I posted some of the pictures up on Twitter and over in Slack for folks, and I'll probably, you know, certainly continue having a sprinkling of those now and again, but it was great. Did talk to Justin about making a visit back to Hoth, to Echo Base. We all know, nice. We all know Justin's very pro-Empire, so this will probably correspond with an invasion of sorts.
We're gonna have to move our base after he comes.
I'm not so sure. We
can blindfold him and bring him in the back way.
We might be able to do that. We might be able to actually arrange a diplomatic mission of sorts. But so Justin and I are presently corresponding to work out some of the details there. Obviously, things have to go through their proper channels over at Lucasfilm. But we do hope to have at least just for an episode. Justin returning to Echo Base, which he used to host or co-host.
It'd be fun to have him back, definitely. Yeah. Well, next time, hopefully, Chris and I can go as well, too. So,
and he certainly said to say hi to you guys and all the listeners and fans. And, and he said that you guys are definitely welcome. If you happen to find yourselves...
Hear that, Chris? We are welcome at
that Lucasfilm. I know. That makes me feel special.
I'm going to take that literally. Hey, they said I was welcome here. I just walk right in, check things out. Speaking of Pablo, he's had a bit of a, I won't say a firestorm on Twitter, but a bit of a exchange with some fans over the last day or so on the whole canon debate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I haven't read all that. I saw some of the talk in Slack yesterday about this, and I get the original tweet was something about canon not being as necessary anymore. Was that the tweet, or what was the actual tweet for the first one that started this off, Tim?
I mean, obviously Pablo deals with a gazillion questions every day from fans about what's canon, what isn't canon, and people wanting like some serious granular detail on certain things, and if it's canon or not. And particularly as we see, I think recently one of the drivers for this is the most recent Darth Vader comic, which jumps in, it starts in at issue one, where pretty much episode 3 ends in the last scene of episode 3 between the Emperor and Vader, and where the Emperor has essentially reassembled Vader into this, you know, cybernetic creature. And so the comic has some different dialogue from what we experience in the movie. And Pablo's been hammered with some of these things and such. At least that's some of the most recent stuff. So Pablo yesterday kind of prefaced this with a tweet saying, you know, look, these are my own thoughts and my own ideas. These are not reflective of Lucasfilm policy in any way toward what canon is. But people ask me about, you know, what's canon, what isn't canon, how can we better define these things? So he kind of then put out there a string of thoughts on things, you know, mentioning that he's asked about oftentimes some specifics. I think one of the quotes from one of his tweets is that canon doesn't necessarily split the hairs of something like dialogue or these other, you know, really finite or granular details. So, you know, his thought, I think what he was getting toward is that these are stories, and these are stories that may have been seen and then later told by different people. So if we kind of step back a little bit and we think about, well, hey, you know, maybe the scene in the cantina if we try to put that together outside of actually having something visual that went in there, well, we might talk to a handful of people. Hey, were you here? Do you know who Han Solo is? Were you here when he shot? I hear he shot Greedo. Is that true? Well, sure. Mm-hmm. Someone's going to give you a version of that story. Someone else who was there is going to give you a slightly different version of that story based on what they saw and what they heard. And so I think a lot of what Pablo is going toward is, look, the overall stories themselves are canonical, but these finite details we're not necessarily looking to define in canon, because things like dialogue are going to be different between a comic book or a novel or something animated or something live action. So, you know, these different reports of certain things that happens can vary. So he kind of goes on to say that there are things that canon doesn't necessarily account for, and there are certain artifacts that will come as a result of whatever medium the story is being told through. And, you know, there then were some folks on Twitter who basically spun this around to say, oh, well, Pablo just said there is no canon, or canon no longer matters. There are even some, I use the term, maybe it's a little derogatory, web rags. You know, various internet-only news, so-called newspapers and such, but, you know, internet-only, mm-hmm. who kind of look for these things and troll them, and they're, you know, very much like a tabloid, and they try to pull some of these things apart. And one of them very specifically completely misquoted Pablo, and actually he went after them directly on Twitter and their thoughts on it, so... I thought that this was something that was really recent, because it started yesterday and it even continued to an extent today. And we oftentimes talk about what is canon and what isn't canon. And I personally like Pablo's definition. I like his thoughts on what is and what isn't, and the fact that these are stories that, you know, if we look at the original preface of Star Wars, it's as told in the Journal of the Wills. So if we think about, you know, even ancient cultures and societies in our own real world, you know, you have stories that were written down or that they were verbally told, and you may get different versions of them.
You know, and this is one thing that bothers me about the fandom in general, is that people get so stuck on these little details, and it's like, in the grand scheme of things, it really doesn't matter all that much. And some of the stuff I've seen on Pablo's tweets is kind of just that. It's like, you know, don't sweat the small stuff type thing. Mm-hmm. And it's got to be a living, breathing document. I mean, canon is going to be a moving target all the time, because everything's changing. Everything adds to it. And at some point, will they get to where they were before Disney bought Lucasfilm and they kind of wipe the slate clean? Probably. I mean, you can only go so long with history building up and not having baggage to the point where we can't make any more stories.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, yeah, some of the stuff he had in there just really kind of hit home, and I think it's great that he goes after some of these guys in the way he does. But, man, he's got a tough job.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, he absolutely does.
I was fascinated by the part where he was talking about, like, why, despite, I think, of the Death Star, like, control room or whatever being so large, why they're standing so close together is because of framing for the film camera. But, like, as a film buff that is just fascinated by all the technical aspects of it, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. There's certain things that, you know what, sometimes we just can't explain in fantasy land, so we have to draw it back to reality. And, you know, hey, we all love Star Wars. That's why we're on a Star Wars podcast. That's why our listeners are listening to it. And, you know, once in a while, we all kind of need that reality check of, hey, folks, it's make-believe.
Right. You know, it does kind of all come back to that episode of SNL back in, I guess it was the early 70s, where it had William Shatner on. He was supposedly at a convention, and, you know, somebody's asking him, well, you know, in episode number, you know, 64, when you left the room, what were you and Spock talking about when you walked out the door? And he's like, we gave her a sandwich. It was lunch. The scene was over, you know? Like, and I always come back exactly. to that kind of thing when you think about this kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, it is. It's just a story that's being told. So we'd love to have all the details filled in, but they're not there. You know, you can't fill in. You can't make it more detailed than it was. So some of that stuff can be written in novels and stuff, filled in later in comics. But it is what it is. You know, it's just there's only so much you can dig out of that detail.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, hey, I love the old Tales books. The Legends books, the Tales of the Mos Eisley Cantina, Tales of Jabba's Palace, etc. And those books were cool because they kind of filled in some of those little gaps where you wonder what the stories are of some of these other people in the room that you see and maybe what they're talking about, what kind of business are they transacting, that kind of stuff. You know, and those were cool. And hey, canon or not, it's entertaining.
Exactly. Well, speaking of entertaining and if they're doing enough for us, Chris, we had talked about this on Slack a while ago about your, I shouldn't say falling out of love with Star Wars, but, you know, your disenfranchisement in some cases and how much they're taking risks with the material going forward and if they should be doing more.
Yep.
You know, one thing you had mentioned, and you got a note here too about canceling making the Rogue One book, and we had talked about this maybe a week or so ago on the show, or a couple weeks ago, that we didn't get any making of, you know, documentary stuff from TFA either. And it's like, we've got this whole brave new world of Star Wars, and we're getting nothing about how they're making it. It seems very frustrating to me. And I think you're probably even a little more so than I am on the topic.
Yeah, just a little bit. It's funny because the one of my favorite behind the scenes things of Star Wars is The Beginning, which talks about the making of The Phantom Menace. And between the opening few minutes where you have George Lucas literally saying Jar Jar is the key to all of this.
Lou, are you still with us?
Well, I couldn't hear you. There was some static on the line, I think. I think we're being bombarded from orbital assault and couldn't hear you.
But from that to, like, the shows the auditions of all the people that, you know, auditioned for Anakin. It has all the problems with Tatooine and filming there because their sets got pretty much 100%, or almost 100% destroyed. That's one of my favorites because it shows all of the problems that went into making that movie. And even the documentary about the original trilogy shows the problems that they had with making the movie. It wasn't some picture-perfect, you know, production. And neither of the two films that have come out since the Disney acquisition have been perfect production-wise, but we know, like, next to nothing about it, and I wish we did.
Yeah. And Chris, I know you're going to talk, I know you want to talk more about this, you know, are they taking enough risks idea here, but, you know, my comment on the book, I'm also real disappointed, and I truly hope that some type of documentary does end up coming out on this stuff. I love the behind the scenes stuff. I love pulling the curtain back. For as much as I am entertained by the films themselves, I like to see, you know, I want to know how the soup is made.
Yeah.
I like to see all the stuff that goes into it. I'm completely fascinated by the production side of things. And while The Force Awakens was, you know, is not a favorite Star Wars film of mine, it was the first film in a number of years. So we are in a, you know, technology wise, in many ways, a different era of filmmaking versus what we saw in Episode 3. There's some new technology out there. There's new methods, that kind of thing. Obviously, the look and the feel of the film was very different because it took place in a different era in the universe, but also the cinematic and directorial decisions were very different from what we've seen in the past. It had some grittier things in it. It had some, you know, different types of scenes and different types of shots, and I would love to see more of that. Now, Rogue One, still, I will tell you, holds as my second favorite Star Wars film of all time. And I absolutely love to consume anything about that movie. So, yeah, it's a big bummer that this book is not coming out. So, again, hopefully something does come out in the future, particularly a documentary. I mean, well, I would love a book and certainly enjoy reading it and seeing pictures and that kind of stuff. A documentary and hearing people talk about things. And to me, it's not so much letting their faults be known. It's a, hey, you know what? A went wrong, and this is how we fixed it. This is how we overcame it.
Yeah,
that's the kind of stuff I like to see.
Exactly. It makes me happy to see that kind of thing. And, you know, even on, like, you know, the Rogue One, you know, video, there was a handful of scenes that they put in there, not scenes, but you know, behind the scenes type stuff. And it was what, maybe a total of like 8 minutes long total.
Yeah, not much.
And I'm like, you know, you guys must have thousands of hours of stuff you shot for this kind of stuff, because you know how many hours did they release on the like the last re-release of the original trilogy stuff? There was a ton of stuff out there. And you're telling me now you're just not filming that stuff anymore? I mean, come on, no. I know you've got it in a can somewhere. Yep. Dress it up. Let us see it. I mean, we're fans. No one's going to – no one is going to look at a behind-the-scenes thing and say, oh, my God, look what they did here, and then let's never watch their movies again. You know, it's, I mean, unless you accidentally killed somebody on set and covered it up, what harm is there in releasing that stuff?
Mm-hmm. Well, and, hey, there are so many films now – that while the film is being filmed, there are people who are filming the film being filmed.
Right.
Because they know, hey, we want this behind the scenes stuff because the fans love it. We want to do a documentary. We want to get all this footage. So that kind of stuff happens. I am hard pressed to believe that that did not happen during The Force Awakens or the filming of Rogue One.
Right.
So there's got to be something out there. I want to see it. I definitely want to see it.
The one I really want to see this
I'm
stuff
fascinated
for
by it.
Is going to be the Han Solo movie. I mean, the last couple weeks we've talked about the problems I've had with that one. I would love to see the behind the scenes stuff for that one.
That's what I wouldn't hold my breath for, my friend.
I know we're not going to get it, but I mean, man, I would love to see what happened. What went so wrong, and how come nobody knew about it until it was so far into it? But and we've already talked about that. But yeah, I would love to get that kind of stuff. So, Chris, what else do you think they should be doing to take risks? I mean, I think there's more to your comment.
Yeah. So I'm going to start off with a series of tweets that I made on June 22nd. This was, I think, right after the Han Solo thing was announced. So I said, okay, so if I'm not sure if this is an unpopular opinion or not, but I'm going to say it anyways. I think Lucasfilm is scared of Star Wars. By that, I mean that they're afraid of doing something that isn't Star Wars-y enough. I don't think this franchise should be held to certain kinds of standards, be it genres of films, styles, visions, tones, humor, etc. TFA was arguably a safe film. Rogue One was more outlandish, but the story was no risk. The Han Solo film is predictable because it dealt with a character we already knew. Even the rumored Boba Fett film that got canned is essentially a safe bet. I almost think that the powers that loom over Star Wars as a whole are extremely afraid of making a bad movie. If not a bad movie, then at least one that was divided on opinions like the prequels were. If we get a bad Star Wars movie, I'd much rather it be one that turns out to be different or risky rather than something we all predicted. Anyways, that's just my thoughts right now. I definitely welcome your thoughts on this. And then an hour or so later, I saw an article about talking about the Han Solo movie, and it had this quote in it. After relaunching the franchise, which had taken damage from the critical reception of the Star Wars prequels, and building not just an acclaimed new saga with The Force Awakens, but kicking off a series of standalone films like Rogue One, Kathleen Kennedy felt she had earned her galactic bona fides. The directors should give her the benefit of the doubt and follow her concept of what the Star Wars movie should be. I think that was from like Variety or Hollywood Reporter or something like that. And then I said, wow, not sure I agree with any of this at all. So basically my point is that I think that's part, you know, partially why we're not getting any behind the scenes content is because Lucasfilm, and I don't know if it's Lucasfilm or Disney or just, you know, maybe like the leaders of that. I would doubt it's the company as a whole. But why does Star Wars have to be X? Or why does it have to be Y? Why can't it be Z? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
like, people are like, oh, well, why, you know, Star Wars is going to be, it's all about this, or it's all about that, or I'm not going to see it if it doesn't have a lightsaber in it. I'm like, Star Wars isn't about lightsabers. Like, Episode 4 hardly had lightsabers in it, and the only reason that we're so fascinated by that now is because of the prequel trilogy, which had a ton of them. But, like,
I see your point, and I think you're right. The, you know, TFA was nothing earth-shatteringly new. Rogue One, while it's one of my favorite Star Wars movies out there, it was a very safe choice to make.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it was bad. I mean, in that case, I think The Safe Choice is a good choice because it's a movie we all wanted to see.
Yeah. And it wasn't the genre film that I was expecting. I was hoping it would be a little bit more gritty. But
yeah, me too, yeah.
So did I.
But it was very good.
But was it safe to kill off all your lead characters? I don't think it was.
No.
Well,
but I mean, you there was literally no other option.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all expected that. And you're not, it wasn't a movie that we were looking for a Rogue One 2. You weren't going to have a second one of those because that team did their job. The Han Solo movie coming out, I mean, it's a movie I've said before I don't really want, per se. I mean, I'm going to see it, definitely, but it's a safe choice from their standpoint because it's Han Solo, you know?
Yeah.
It is a little risky in the fact that it's kind of like when you ask a prize fighter, you know, well, when are you going to get in the ring and defend your title again? Well, I don't have to defend my title. What incentive do I have to defend my title besides more money? If I lose, I lose a lot. If I win, I didn't have to prove anything to you because I've already got the title, you know? Yeah. And with the Han Solo thing, it's the same thing. It's like there's no upside to putting the movie out besides making some money. There's a huge downside to that because if they screw up this character, man, fans are going to be upset. So yeah. To me, that one is a really risky choice. Predictable, but risky. But you're right, because I would like to see more non-Star Wars Star Wars movies. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there we can see. We don't need I don't even know. I'm not a writer. I don't have those creative genes to say, hey, let's do this instead. But there's got to be other stories we can tell. We don't need to be all about the Skywalkers and lightsabers.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, here's the thing. Star Wars, ever since 1977, has been something that has made filmmaking as a whole more... It's brought something new to it. It's almost been genre defining, but we definitely got that with the original trilogy. I personally think we got that with the prequel trilogy too. And then, you know, you have the whole, once you look at everything as a whole, there's some crazy, like, connected storytelling bits between the prequel trilogy and original trilogy that just is fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I almost find it very hard to believe that Lucas was able to come up with that, but the fact that he did just shows how intelligent he is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, how knowledgeable he has of films and the way the stories are supposed to be told, whether or not you agree with the final product. But with TFA and maybe a little bit more with Rogue One, but still nothing like the old films, it was nothing new, and it did nothing to, you know, advanced filmmaking. It did nothing to show why Star Wars is as revolutionary as its predecessors. And that's something that I feel like we're not getting in the movies. I don't feel like we're getting it in the novels, even the comics. I mean, I liked the comics when I was a regular reader of them, but they did nothing. And then, you know, that's probably also my problem with the books, as you guys know, that, you know, it's not doing anything to advance the medium that it's in, if that makes sense.
Well, I don't know that the comics are necessarily doing anything to advance the medium that they're in, but I think the comics are doing some daring things.
I think the comics are the most are the most product of moving that along, but you know that they're not. I mean, you know, there's only so much you can do with comic books.
True,
and, but I think they have the most to show.
Yeah, and I think they're doing a great job of telling the stories that they are telling. And the interesting thing is, they tell some stories that we didn't really think that we necessarily needed. You know, when they gave us some background on Lobot, that was an unexpected story in the Lando comic, and I found that I loved it. And then we have, you know, the more current stuff. We have things with Dr. Aphra, who is an outstanding character. We have a lot of focus on Darth Vader and his journey, which is really something that is not explored very well. And even in the Legends books, there wasn't a whole heck of a lot that really talked about Vader's journey between episodes 3 and 4.
Yes,
there was a Darth Vader book, which was it was okay. I honestly think the comics are doing a better job of it The current books, yeah, the current books, while I have enjoyed them, they are, it just feels overall that the overall book effort is kind of a slow start. The exception to that is the Thrawn novel, which is just insanely outstanding, and I could throw a whole bunch of words in there that you guys don't like me to use. I cannot go on enough about that book, but that book also had a foundation, and Tim Zahn actually didn't have to deviate very much from the material that he originally wrote on Thrawn. The films, yeah, you know, it's interesting. With the films, we had a lot of discussion on Slack several days ago about the possibility, or at least our thoughts, on Star Wars films exploring different genres within their filmmaking and their storytelling. So, you know, Rogue One, Lou, you mentioned, I believe, us not getting the Rogue One film that we kind of originally wanted, and really the film that we were originally pitched. We were pitched something that was much more war film. This, the Rogue One we got, was not really the war movie that we expected it to be. And it was a great movie. It was really outstanding. But, you know, when you start, when you're pitching a movie and you start throwing things out there like Band of Brothers and Saving Private Ryan, I have certain expectations. And I think a lot of other people did as well. We, there were some discussions, you know, someone mentioned like, you know, noir type of Star Wars film and, you know, comedies and things like, if you guys remember in Legends now, they had the Death Troopers novel, which was basically stormtroopers on a certain ship. They got some type of virus that turned them into zombies. Han Solo was actually in that. Also, so it was kind of, it did have a direct tie in, at least to our main group of heroes. I love that book. I thought that book was fantastic. There was another book that I think also went back to the Old Republic that had kind of a similar spin to it. And, like, I would really be interested in seeing those types of things because Star Wars itself is not a genre. And I think that we can use the universe to play with some different things. Now, that said, for as much as we might love to see that, will that those things have the universal appeal of what is essentially mainstream Star Wars now? I don't know. I'm not so sure that it would. People, there'd be people say, oh, well, I don't like that horror stuff, so I'm not going to see a Star Wars zombie movie. Or that whole detective noir thing doesn't really appeal to me, so I don't want to see that. And you know, let's keep in mind, the moneymaker for Disney and Lucasfilm is not the fans like you guys and me and most of our listeners. It's the casual viewer, and that's a hard pill for a lot of folks to swallow, even though that between the three of us, we might go see a Star Wars film in the theater, you know, 15 times, and the casual viewer is only going to go once, but there's a heck of a lot more of them out there than there is us. So it has to have universal appeal. I've talked a lot this episode.
That's really okay, too. We like hearing you talk. I mean, you made some very valid points, and I think there's room for all of this, but I also agree with Chris in some cases, though, that I'd like to see more stuff be done. I mean, we said it before. I kind of liken the whole Lucasfilm thing with Disney's takeover to the Marvel thing owned by Disney as well, and they're not seem to be taking, you know, the safe approach there. I mean, they've released some movies that, frankly, I was like, really? You're going to release that? And it was like, wow, you know, it did really well. So if you trust the people making this stuff, I think you need to, you know, like, you know, take the training wheels off and kind of do something daring.
There's an article on IO9 that I just love. It's called Star Wars is All the Same Nowadays, and It's Becoming a Problem. Kind of lengthy, but it's a really good read. I put it in the Slack channel a few days ago. But it starts off by saying, you know, talking about the firing of Phil Lord and Chris Miller. And it says, we're learning a lot more about what Lucasfilm feels is acceptable within its universe and what isn't. The problem is that what's acceptable looks to be very, very narrow. And you know, it talks about the films and even goes into the books and the comics. And then actually, Lou, it mentions Marvel at one point. It says, remember how everyone went nuts for Captain America Winter Soldier and Guardians of the Galaxy? Part of the reason those films stood out was because they were so different from anything else we'd seen in the Marvel Universe. By all appearances, Lucasfilm doesn't want that much variation. What it wants is more akin to a TV show where the different directors brought in don't make a huge stylistic difference in the whole. But there's a part later that it's talking about the books and the comics, and I mostly agree with this statement, but it says, but either way, the result is a universe of possibilities being severely limited to the same damn places and characters over and over again. And I kind of see the point. Like, I disagree when it, because, you know, we've seen, you know, a character like Dr. Aphra, which I think the reason why, not only is she a really awesome character, but she's somebody new. And we can see her on the visual. Like, I feel like if she was introduced in a novel, she might not have the same effect. But the fact that we get to see her visually with a comic book, I think makes her more memorable in that regard. But, like, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, what are the movies that people are most wanting in this, in the anthology series? Han Solo, Boba Fett, Obi-Wan, Darth Maul.
Who
Darth
actually
Vader.
Asked for a Han Solo movie?
There are people out there that want this.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, okay. You know, it's all...
It's not us,
characters
but...
that we know, or like we want. I want an Old Republic trilogy. Okay, if you want Old Republic, go play KOTOR, or read the or play the Old Republic, or read the books that are in that. Like, you know, we have this stuff, and that's my problem with, like, I love Obi-Wan Kenobi. I would love an Obi-Wan movie, but that's because I love the character, and I've you know, wanted this because I want to see Ewan McGregor come back. I love Obi-Wan. I want to see him have adventures on Tatooine, but we don't need that, you know? And
well, I think we need a combination, though, Chris. I mean, I think you need the ones like an Obi-Wan movie or a Han Solo movie that you know is going to draw in fans.
Yeah.
You get them excited about a good movie, and then we can do, I don't know, Tales from the Cantina movie that's got just random characters doing different things.
Yeah.
You know, you got to do the moneymakers with the ones that are might be a little more risky.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's the thing. This goes back to what we were talking about before, and that is the economic driver of all of this. And while we might want to see some more variety of things, Lucasfilm needs to be convinced that the general movie-going public wants to see a variety of these types of things. And I don't know that they are. I don't know that they're convinced of it because I don't know that that demand exists. And I would love to see some of this variety. You give me a great, you know, detective novel version of Star Wars, and we actually had some of those books in Legends, the Coruscant Knights books. I love those. I thought they were really cool. You give that to me, I will eat that up. You know, you give me something with zombies. Love it. I'm there. Is the general public going to go for it? I'm not so sure. And that's what their decision is going to be based on.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Tim. That's going to be what the final decisions are made on. Dollars talk. So,
Tim, you mentioned, you know, a detective novel set in Star Wars. I like how, and this, I'm going to bring up The Expanse again. It essentially is a science fiction story. Which, you know, is what Star Wars is. It's space fantasy, space opera, whatever. But, you know, at its core, it is a genre movie. But The Expanse not only tells that, but it includes mystery, it includes noir, it includes thrillers. And that's what makes it so captivating as a show. And, you know, that's something that Star Wars isn't doing. It's not telling multiple stories at once. It's doing, like, TFA was just, you know, an adventure movie. Rogue One was, you know, it was a war movie, technically, in the last act, but, like, it was still an adventure movie.
Sure.
It wasn't like Saving Private Ryan, which is a war movie from start to finish.
Right.
With a little bit of drama in between. But, like, I also think with the, you know, with the games, too, the video games, we're getting Battlefront, which is one of the most successful Star Wars games of the 2000s. Mm-hmm. Why not make something new? and you saw what happened. Like, people were hyped about Battlefront, and then they stopped playing it.
Right. Now, Chris, I don't disagree with you. I absolutely do not disagree with you, but you know, I just see the reasons why they don't want to take those risks.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. And I, you know, we talk about Marvel and everything, and you know, maybe we do have to give Lucasfilm and Disney a little bit more time. I mean, we're only what, 5 years into this. I'm looking here at the list of Marvel movies, and the first ones were Iron Man, and then Hulk, and then another Iron Man, and then Thor, Captain America, and then we had the Avengers. And, you know, that was all of Phase 1. And then once we got into Phase 2, you know, continuations of the previous characters, but then we got Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man. So, you know, maybe it will just take some time to see these different kind of stories being told on screen. Mm-hmm. But I think there is absolutely no excuse for them not to be told in comics and books. And I'm glad we're seeing it in comics, but the fact that we're not getting it in books is very displeasing, I think.
I agree.
Well, we'd love to hear our listeners' thoughts on these same topics. So, you know, send us an email with what you think would be a good risk for them to take and what wouldn't be a good risk for them to take. I think that's important. You got to play that tightrope walk of what's a good risk and what's not a good risk. So if you guys have some thoughts on that, let us know. We'd love to hear if there's something that's new and unique and good. We'll read that in the air for you, too. You can send those to echobase@randomchatter.com. And just any thoughts about the show in general, too, would be great.
So, yeah, I definitely want to hear people send in their opinions. If you don't want to email us, you can also find us on our social media. We have our Facebook, facebook.com/randomchatternetwork. The Twitter for the show is @EchoBasePodcast. The network Twitter is @RandomChatter. My Twitter is @TheCurseOfChris. Please send me your unpopular opinions, especially if you disagree with me. I will read them on the show, maybe. Tim, what is your Twitter?
@QuigonTim. That's Tim with two M's.
And Lou, what is yours?
Just my name. It's @LouSecki, LouSecki.
And please, please, please don't forget to go to randomchatter.com and listen to all of our other awesome shows.
You can also basically tell people about our podcast and spread the word about it by leaving us some great reviews on iTunes and Stitcher. You know, 5 stars or whatever kind of thing they have, and write some stuff. You know, have your fingers do some things. Maybe it's just your thumbs if you're using your phone. If you're actually like on one of those computer things, full keyboard, you can make all of your fingers move around. Leave some cool reviews. And certainly we appreciate some financial support. It doesn't take a lot. You know, kind of the whole essence of crowdsourcing is that you get a lot of people to contribute a little, and that makes for something big and something great and something very successful. We, you know, do require some funds for maintaining our website, maintaining storage space for all the episodes. You folks can go into our backlog of episodes and pick episodes up on things. We talked here about comic books in episode 100. We had Heather Antos from Marvel Comics on the episode, so you should definitely go back and check that one out. Chris kind of needs to. He was on it.
I did hear it. It was very good.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So you can make those donations to us by going to patreon.com/randomchatter. We have a whole bunch of cool new perks that Chris and Lou, as our faithful captains, have structured out. And we just kind of announced those last week. We announced those on this show. We announced those on the Random Chatter show. Take a look at those. And really, truly, the coolest, greatest thing, even though we want you to donate, you know, $10, $20, $30 million a month, if you just donate $1 a month, you get access to Slack. Guys, how many times did we mention Slack just in this episode alone?
A lot.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, probably 6, 8, maybe even 10 times. I mean, we love all of our fans, and you folks know you throw us a tweet and we will interact with you. You hit us up on Facebook and we will interact with you. You send us an email and we will interact with you. But Slack is like real-time discussion. It's basically a chat room. You get to interact with the hosts, with Random Chatter staff, with other fans. That's just $1 a month gets you into that. And we obviously do have a lot of really cool discussions in there on Star Wars, on something specifically for Echo Base. We talk about movies, we talk about TV, we talk about Derek, we talk about all sorts of things. So seriously, $1 a month is feasible for a lot of people. We understand some people, it's tight. You can't even swing that. That's cool. That's okay. You can still throw us a tweet. That doesn't cost you anything.
I should also point out that if people have questions about how Patreon works or how perks are delivered or something like that, you know, let us know, because we'll be happy to answer things. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, oh yeah, I've been meaning to donate to get into Slack or something like that. I've heard Tim talk about it so much.
We have actually had people that donated to us on Patreon because of my exhaustive pitches.
I think it was just to get you to be quiet.
Maybe. That actually could be right. That could be right.
So finally, the music that you hear in this podcast is The Force Theme by Scandroid and The Imperial March by Celldweller, who is the same person, by the way.
Different personalities. thank you very much for listening, guys. We'll be back at you again in about a week.